Okay, thank you very much. Should be up any second now. Okay, I think, there we go. I think most of you know me, Matt Caffrey. I've been doing this almost as long as Peter, and was lucky enough to be called on to start up this conference down in Maxwell that we, after a year, called Connections. And it's just, I'm just so proud. I tell people I feel like I'm a grandfather because I get all this pride and all this enjoyment out of Connections UK. I do hardly any of the work, so it's just like a grandchild. But the really what I want to talk about, and I know Graham very wisely said we need to talk about how we're going to move forward, not so much why, but I think the why and the how kind of tie in a little bit. The first thing I have to do, I'm here in my own nickel, not in an official capacity, but we're still supposed to say that before we get going. And again, these really are just my opinions. As you can see from Dr. Perla's talk, there's a host of opinions within our establishment. As a teenager, I was around during the course of the Vietnam War. And even as a little kid, I was thinking, you know, there must be something that I don't understand, because it really seems like we're doing a stupid job in Vietnam. And but I'm sure the grown-ups are smarter than I am, and it's not as stupid as it looks. And not surprisingly, with all the casualties and without the progress, there was a lot of people protesting the war. And one of the things that even as a fairly young early teen just didn't seem to make sense to me, even back then, was one of the more popular protest songs was, "I'm going to study war no more, I'm going to study war no more, I'm going to study war no more." And just big, happy, "Oh, this is great, we're not going to study war." And there was a movement to kick ROTC off different college campuses because, you know, these were institutions of learning, and it's evil to learn about war. Well, even back then, that seemed kind of curious to me. Has there ever been a case where a stupid general suffered fewer casualties? or one that's less ignorant? And then the other thing, if something is deadly, if something is really bad, doesn't that mean you need to study it more? You know, just within walking distance of where we are right now, not really that long ago, there was this horrible cholera epidemic, and a very smart doctor used what today we would call statistical analysis and geolocation correlation, a lot of techniques that we think are new, and he was able to make a correct diagnosis of what the core problem was with the outbreak. And it saved lives here in London, it saved lives throughout the world because that information was shared. Now, that doesn't mean that that disease has gone away, but there are many, many people alive today that wouldn't be alive, not only because they were cured of disease, but they never caught the disease to begin with, or their parents that would have died from disease lived long enough to have kids. So we've made progress, even though there is still disease. So what I believe is that we need to study war for much of the same reasons, that war games provide an edge. I have a longer course on wargaming, and before I get into wargaming proper, I talk about, you know, in warfare you have edges. It could be better training or larger numbers or better technology, anything to improve your odds over your opponent. Well, wargaming provides one of those edges. It helps us to anticipate consequences. It's not proof positive. I have a whole thing I talk about confidence levels in wargaming, that wargames can help create virtual veterans, that we had folks going into the first Gulf War who had flown over really not that dissimilar territory out at Nevada, out of Red Flag. And they were saying this was easier than Red Flag. So all through military history, everyone sees that veterans have an advantage over green troops, but you can't start as a veteran. Well, now you can. And then this whole business about wargaming being a catalyst to give us edges in other areas, that there's a thing that's not quite as popular anymore. Andy Marshall kind of got it started in the United States, whole issue of military technical revolutions and military affairs, where one case you start with the technology and figure out the tactics and organizations and everything else, and the other case you start with the concepts. A very good example of military revolution, probably the grandfathers of some of the people in this room invented the tank. Huge impact on warfare. But when it was first introduced during the First World War, it didn't have the right attributes, didn't have the right tactics, didn't have the right organization. And as it was introduced, as it was fought more, the British became smarter and smarter on how to employ it. Unfortunately, their adversaries got smarter and smarter on how to counter it. Well, war games allow you to get smarter while your adversaries aren't getting smarter. So war games do provide, you know, some very, very important edges. So why do we need to keep working on it then? Well, all edges can erode. You know, the Germans had a huge advantage in like the 1870s because they were really the only nation that wargamed. And as time went on, the United States started wargaming, Great Britain started wargaming, France started wargaming. They never quite caught up to the Germans, but they got pretty close. And so that edge kind of eroded. And we can't block the spread of wargaming, but what we can do is we can innovate faster than they can copy. The question is, will we innovate faster than they can copy? So what are some of, so why do we need an international effort to try to make sure that we innovate faster than they can copy? Well, I think we are structurally, we can win the race to stay ahead in wargaming if we're part of that race. Now, if you look back to the beginning of the space race, the Soviet Union got Sputnik. They were racing, and the United States were like, gee, should we spend money on space? And we only caught up and we only went ahead when we realized there was a space race and we started competing. So one of the prerequisites for us to stay ahead is we need to work to stay ahead. As a community of nations, we've got a lot of different people with a lot of different ideas, with a lot of different insights, many more than in the United States. And there's this old thing that's truism in the US, I think truism anywhere else. The bigger high schools tend to have more successful football teams, baseball teams, basketball teams, because they have more people to draw from. And the larger the community we're drawing from to get smarter war games and better war games and better techniques, the more likely we are to have some real gems come out of that whole process. Another big advantage we have is as free nations, we've got this competitive marketplace. Computer games make a lot of money. There's an old joke in the print wargaming business that Peter's probably heard about 10,000 times, that the best way to have a small fortune in print wargaming is to start with a large fortune. that's not true with the computer guys. There are computer games. Now some of them are the more popular. They're kind of on the edge of war games. But Civilization, which I feel is a war game, has gone over $1 billion in worldwide sales, retail. And that's even in dollars, that's a lot of money. So you know, a very competitive industry where you have people from different countries all bringing their best ideas together. The problem is, our adversaries can also buy things off the commercial marketplace. So again, we could very easily fall behind simply by not keeping to work at it. So what can we do practically to work together as a community of nations, a community of free nations, trying to make sure that we suffer fewer casualties in future wars? Well, one of the things I would love to do, but it's just not going to work, I'd love all of you to come over to Maxwell Air Force Base next year and come to my conference and split off into the different working groups and all the rest of that stuff. But it's just too much money. People don't have the time. People don't have the money. Airfare into Montgomery is not cheap. Building is. But that's just not practical. So what can we do that's practical? Well, one of the things that we can do is set up different connections conferences. I am just so pleased and so thrilled and just it's just so great that the Netherlands is joining the community of connections nations. And I think that will help the Netherlands, and a strong alliance is stronger as each member of the alliance grows in strength. And that's great. And one of the things that I'm planning to work on is to create a connection starter kit. I would have different people take over as co-chairs different years, and I would write the same email to them over and over again. And it started to occur to me is that maybe I should write out a standard email, and when somebody else comes over as a co-chair, I just cut and paste that and change the first name. And so I've sort of kind of got a starter kit already. And I understand we have folks here from a lot of different nations. If you'd like a Connections UK too, I can't and I won't. I have a full-time job. I can't do the work, but I can provide some of the information to help you get that started. Also, you know, this first day we had yesterday, I think, is extremely valuable. It was a show of hands. A lot of us already knew just a little bit about wargaming who came to that. But really, where does somebody who has been convinced that wargaming is important, that wants to do more in wargaming, where do they come to learn about wargaming? So simply by having that first day effort at a National Connections Conference, that's a big step forward. And one of the things that we're going to work on is try to come up with some sort of kit for that too, so that people come to one of the existing Connections Conferences, get smart at the first thing, day thing, tailor to their own national efforts and all the rest. The other thing, and this is something that I heard both from our colleagues from the Netherlands and from our colleagues from the UK, probably the best option, the area that we can help each other the most, is by creating some sort of an online open source collaboration hub. And as Peter very wisely pointed out, simply having a website does not create collaboration, it doesn't create a community, but it is a way to start. And one of the things that I'm looking forward to, and I'm sure my UK colleagues will agree with me, a Connections Conference isn't a couple of days a year. It's darn near a whole year of effort. You know, the conference itself, and then you get the surveys back, and you compile them, you take a look at it. And then if you're not starting to get organized around Christmas, you're behind the power curve for the next year. But there is going to be October, November, kind of a small window of opportunity. And what I'm planning to do with my inner group, and I'm hoping that the other Connections Conferences, including Australia and the Netherlands, is to take that two-month period before we really start needing to get serious about the next year's Connections Conference and use that time to try to figure out how we can turn just a piece of computer software into something that can really create a collaborative hub. Now, one of the things that I was happy to hear about two things about the repository. One that was kind of funny and one I think was insightful. The funny one was I was talking to one of the guys that came up with the idea for the repository. And one of the things I suspect is true in everybody's military. You've got the Iron Majors who are there when the piece of paper is blank and are the ones that actually come up with the ideas. And then you have the generals that sign the no longer blank piece of paper and make it official. So I was talking to some of the Iron Majors or the IRGS-13 who were coming up with all of this. And they said, yeah, we talked about it, and we decided to put the repository on CIPRNet, which is a special classified network, and make sure nothing was classified above secret, so it would be easy and convenient for everybody to get to. And, yeah, exactly. So the idea about this hub, is because it's international, because it's open source, is it would be something out of Google or something, you know, just available to everybody. And then the thing that they said about the repository in the US, which I think was very smart, is they said they realize at the secret level and just on the CIPRNet, you're not going to get much good stuff listed. So their idea was it should be more of a card catalog than an encyclopedia. And so I'm kind of thinking that's what we might want to do too, that this would be more of a card catalog than an encyclopedia. There could be some encyclopedia elements to it, where we have like biographies of historical important figures in wargaming and stuff like that. But I envision a lot of this to be pointers towards other online sites that already exist. That if you think about it, there is a lot of stuff out there already, but unless you've been part of the community for years, you don't know where this stuff exists. So somebody new to wargaming, new to the effort, could come here and be pointed to what would be more helpful. And finally, I don't have, not only do I have a day job, but I don't have a monopoly on good ideas. And it's been my experience that a lot of good ideas start life as a bad idea,
that somebody comes up with a change to that makes it a pretty good idea, and a third person comes up with another change to it that then makes it a great idea. So this is my email address. It's commercial, my private one at home. And if you have an idea about how to help us work together more as a community, you know, I want to hear from you, and I want to start a dialogue with you. The part about all this I understand the least is we do have Paul Weber and a couple other people trying to generate ongoing conversations through a blog kind of a thing. And he's had a fairly low volume of input. But trying to make it not just a card catalog, but a two-way means of communications, I haven't broken that code at all. So I'd like all ideas, but especially an idea in that area. So finally, oh, not finally, you know, we talk about war games saving individual lives, that we have an edge, we're doing better. Let me kind of head towards closing with a couple of thoughts. Could war games help preserve the peace? Well, one of the things I hear from time to time is that wars occur when there's a difference of opinion as to who's going to win the war. That if one side knows they're going to lose, you know, is that really something they're going to do? Maybe there's a few cases in history, but not many. Also, I was reading an article a couple of years ago, and they were quoting one of the members of the Austro-Hungarian nobility, and they said, you know, if we knew the war was going to be this terrible, we would have never started it. H.G. Wells, I think someone from around these parts, wrote a book called Little Wars. And one of the things that he said in the introduction is that he saw this as an act of pacifism, that the world was becoming more democratic. And if his book could help the voters understand just how terrible war was, then the voters would keep their governments from going to war. The book was written in 1913, so it was not at least immediately successful. But H.G. Wells was ahead of his time on a number of his other predictions. So perhaps, just perhaps, he might be ahead of his time on this one too. I'm a big fan of the whole TV series Star Trek, and there was an episode of Star Trek Voyager where, I forget where it comes up, but somebody asked about the common cold, and wasn't Crusher said, oh yeah, my mom told me about that. When she was a little kid, people still caught colds. And, you know, in one case, it's kind of nice that they're envisioning, we figure it out. In another case is, what century was that supposed to take place in? I think it's probably about that far in the future before somebody would ask, Mommy, what's war? It's not going to be something we're going to solve at this conference. It's not going to be something that we're going to solve within our lifetimes. But let us begin. We have begun. When you finish talking, it's customary to just say, and thank you very much, and sit down. But I want to take just half a minute to say thank you very much. Most of the people in this room have been given their time, their talents, their lives to advancing wargaming before wargaming was cool. Now, at least in the United States, it's cool, and we're ready to take advantage of this opportunity because of all the time and effort you guys have put into over the course of your lives. It's been my experience that overnight successes tend to be successes over many, many, many nights. And I want to thank you for the many nights that you've contributed to put us in the position where we can now perhaps someday lead to a world where people will ask, Mommy, what's war? Thank you.